Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Eva is easy as ABC and 1, 2, 3. Within weeks of becoming the U.S. Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon wipes out half her agency's workforce, gutting the Chicago office responsible for enforcing civil rights laws.
Hell no. We will fight back. We will resist this move with everything we have.
Governor J.B. Pritzker says gutting public education is tantamount to dismantling democracy.
President Trump and his bootlickers I have other words to describe them, too. Are tearing down, even as we speak, the U.S. Department of Education inside.
At risk for Illinois immediately, $3 billion expected from the feds, and the special education and low-income families those dollars support. This as Trump's Justice Department turns a critical eye toward Northwestern, University of Chicago, and other universities the president says haven't done enough to combat anti-Semitism. Meanwhile, downtown shootings reinvigorate talks of instituting a curfew. Mayor Brandon Johnson sticks by his whole-of-government approach.
There are shootings that happen at 3 o'clock in the afternoon sometimes. Throughout the day, there are moments where shootings take place, and primarily because, of course, there are just too many people who have access to illegal guns.
Plus, a plan to store polluted sediment along the lakefront gets scrapped. Drivers line up for real IDs, and the CTA drives forward with cameras to capture cars that illegally use bus lanes.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Mitchell Armantrout from the Chicago Sun-Times, Rufus Williams from WVON, Melody Mercado from Block Club Chicago, and Nader Issa also from the Sun-Times. Now, before we get to the Department of Education, we have some news that has developed within the hour or so, and that is that the Senate advanced this continuing resolution that funds the government, prevents a shutdown, but it took some Democrats in the Senate to do it. Mitch, that includes Illinois' own Dick Durbin. Why did he side with the GOP despite tweeting out he doesn't like what's in the continuing resolution?
Well, no Democrats like what they see in this resolution. You know, this is a spending plan that was forced through by President Trump and his allies in Congress, and this is causing a rift, among Democrats across the board. We saw Governor Pritzker today come out against this spending plan. He called on the senators not to approve this, to Democrats to sign on with this. You know, there's an argument to be made that a government shutdown creates more havoc than is the Democrats want to create. But there are others who say that this is not the time to cave to President Trump and his demands.
Yeah, and so, Melody, you have Durbin taking that first line of thinking, saying that you don't want to have a government shutdown and more chaos on top of the chaos that has already been, he says, wreaked by both the president and Elon Musk. And then you had Governor Pritzker saying that Democrats have the power to stop Trump and Musk, and they should use it. Do they have the power, actually, or is this going to, as Mitch alluded to, further cause a rift in the party, taking away power from Democrats to try and blunt the actions of the president?
I think it's been definitely a push and pull here to try to figure out what the strategy is going to be. It's pretty much, you know, damn if you do, damn if you don't sort of a situation. You know, there have been federal workers that wanted to shut down in order to, you know, have the possibility to negotiate against what Trump has been doing, which is laying off thousands of workers. But then on the other hand, like, if you have a government shutdown, people are not getting paid. The last time this happened, I saw so many stories about federal workers that were struggling. And I think at this point, Democrats are trying to say, we're doing the good thing to keep the payroll going.
And also questions, I believe, as well, of if you would lose some of the victories that Democrats have had in court pushing back against Trump's measures if there isn't any sort of budget to fund the government. So let's move now, Nader.
I find it frustrating because this was an opportunity that the Democrats did have to have some pushback against what's been coming out of Washington. And so the fact that they went in and wanted to be the bigger person and yield without getting anything back in return.
Get nothing back.
Nothing. That is frustrating, and not saying that the government should be shut down, but certainly negotiate for something. because otherwise
it feels so frustrating. Do you think Republicans would have given them any opportunity even to be let in?
They needed Democratic votes. This is how you negotiate. They needed the votes. They should have gotten something for them.
And instead, walking away with, you think, nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. So now we will turn to you, Nader, because this does come as Democrats are very upset about the dismantling of the Department of Education, something that the Education Secretary promises to do. What is the impact here thus far, or could be the impact to Illinois students in classrooms?
I mean, it sounds scary. Like, everybody knows the Department of Education. It sort of oversees schools in the United States. It's not necessarily doomsday for American education. The department was created in 1979 by Congress. There were days before it when there wasn't an education department. But the department really administers a lot of federal funding that goes to states to spend mostly on vulnerable populations. And so it sends money to states for schools that have high shares of students who come from disadvantaged economic backgrounds. It sends money to schools to help students with IEPs, which is special education. And they also oversee civil rights laws and discrimination and federal student aid for students going to college. So the department administers these things. And when you fire the people who administer these things, you're not shutting down the department, but you're sort of getting rid of the method of getting that money to the state.
Grinds to a halt, potentially. What about the economic factor, the budget factor? Are we seeing, we talked about the governor estimated $3 billion set to come Illinois' way for education.
He said that $3 billion he thinks is at risk in Illinois, and because what we said, it's not that the money is being shut off right now, but the people who administer that funding. In CPS, it's about 16% of the school district's budget that comes from federal funding, and so it's a lot of money. It's over $1 billion. The district's already dealing with deficits. They have a $500 million deficit next year that they have to grapple with, and so it's coming at a bad time, a year or two after federal pandemic relief funding is running out, and you know, that really papered over a lot of deficits for government agencies, including for the schools.
And there's sort of those two parallel stories where there is both the actual dollars that are set to come agencies' ways for particular programs, but then there's also this matter of if you don't have folks in the government administering the money, I'm hearing increasingly from government sources that they're not able to function. They don't know if they can continue, even if the grant program is supposed to be continuing. There's nobody answering their calls at the federal government to ensure or answer those questions or to give sign-offs, Rufus.
$3 billion is not nothing. When we talk about our schools throughout the state, and particularly in the city, when we continue to push for more funding, we continue to see where the gaps are, to say that you would take out $3 billion out of the state, that's a lot. And again, you know, I go back to the, when is there the fight? When is there the push against these things? Or are they just being accepted as they come? There's got to be some pushback.
What sort of fight do you think you could see happening? Or it's not as if Trump didn't promise these things. Some of this he was fairly open about on the campaign trail. Not a surprise to Democrats or his...
It doesn't mean we should accept it. I think we are looking at what tends to become an authoritarian government. And as we are citizens and we see this, we have to rise up in a number of different ways. We expect our legislators to do so. We expect the courts to do so. We expect people to do so in the streets. But to be silent in the face of all these things that are coming is problematic on every single level.
So Mitch Pritzker has not been particularly silent. And when he earlier this week spoke to the state's largest public teachers union, he really got in some zingers. He talked about the doge bags in the federal government and in the White House. This was, of course, a speech to a very friendly audience. He got a lot of rays and a standing ovation from the state's largest teachers union. Is this sort of rousing speech campaign style rhetoric, or do you think his saying we're going to take the fight to the feds is accurate?
You know, I think as we've seen Democrats at the national level just sort of struggle to kind of pick a lane when it comes to addressing the Trump administration, Governor Pritzker has very clearly tried to position himself as the attack dog, the guy who's going on national news on seemingly a weekly basis, appearances, you know, on Jake Tapper, MSNBC, just kind of get his face out there. Obviously, we've speculated for years that he's got interests in running for the White House in a few years. And, you know, he's obviously, his team has decided that going head on against Trump is the best way to try and court voters. And, you know, I think we'll see in the midterms exactly how that works out.
But meanwhile, Melody, he says that Illinois does not have the money to make up these losses when it comes either to Medicaid, when it comes to education funding cuts. Meanwhile, you do have Illinois among the states that are taking the federal government to court, especially in terms of this Department of Education, or at least most recently. What is the justification for saying that these moves to dismantle the education department are illegal?
Well, I think it would look bad if our governor didn't join one or was not one of the 20 states trying to fight to make sure that that these cuts are taken back. I mean, we've heard the governor, again, trying to make a play to possibly run for president. He needs to play the game, as people say.
In Illinois, by the way, notching a win today with another ruling that says many of those employees who were let go in various federal agencies, not, I think, the Department of Education just yet, that one's still too fresh, but that they should get their jobs back at least temporarily. Now, Nader, all of this comes as universities are under a lot of pressure and a lot of threats, both to lose more federal money if they keep on their DEI offices open. They've already had some research grants rescinded. The president also saying they should not receive money from the federal government if they have healthy endowments. And now, looking at an investigation into some Chicago area campuses in regards to what the Department of Justice says is those who chose not to stand up to the tide of rising anti-Semitism. Who is doing the investigating and what does this look like?
Yeah, so the president launched through the Department of Justice this task force that's going around exploring allegations of anti-Semitism and how they've been handled across the country. And you're right, there are a lot of issues that they're sort of picking off to go after blue cities, blue mayors, blue states and governors. And so it's the same mayors, most of the same mayors that the Department of Justice now wants to talk about anti-Semitism with, that they talked to about sanctuary cities and in D.C. a couple weeks ago.
Chicago, so, New York, Boston.
And L.A. now and instead LA? Of Denver. And so this is something that, you know, the mayor's office said in Chicago, we've denounced anti-Semitism. You know, others have pointed to keeping Jewish students safe on campus and schools. The universities have said that that's a priority for them. Also keeping Muslim students safe and allowing for, you know, free speech and protest. And obviously we saw a wave of pro-Palestinian protests last year, and so there was the fallout of that.
Have we seen any changes on these college campuses? Granted, this is just this week, so maybe too early, but have there been changes in policies at Northwestern, at University of Chicago, in light of the Department of Justice's actions?
You know, I don't think anything very tangible right now, but we have seen policy changes since the protests last year. I mean, a lot of universities put in pretty restrictive protest and demonstration policies, restricting the time that people could protest, how they could protest, where they could protest. And so that's sort of been the major fallout so far, but they're vowing to cooperate and you know, make sure that they are protecting students of all faiths, of all races.
Now, Rufus, I'm curious, why send this letter to Mayor Johnson and focus on cities versus, say, states that also, of course, house these campuses, especially when you have Governor Pritzker so openly antagonistic? Why the focus on Johnson over Pritzker?
Because he doesn't like Johnson. Because Johnson has been very clear and direct on some of the things that he said. Pritzker, I love Pritzker. He's a billionaire. He can say things a lot of other people can't, won't, without concern about what the implication of that would be. So as he comes in to the mayor with these things, no different than when the mayor goes to Washington to talk about sanctuary cities, there just seems to be a target on Democratic cities. And so he comes into Democratic cities to push against all of that.
And there is also, you know, Northwestern, for example, it's in Evanston. It's not in Chicago.
Right.
And it's a private university. So what's the mayor of Chicago supposed to do? The University of Chicago is here, DePaul, We saw the encampment that Chicago police shut down at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. Some things, you know, might be under the mayor's jurisdiction through the police department and his response in that way, but we've also seen that this isn't just at schools or colleges. A lot of protests have, you know, been opposed and people don't like them, and so that's not to say there haven't been incidents that are troubling, but that's sort of the crux of the issue that Attorney General Pam Bondi is going after the Trump administration right now.
I think it's important to also point out, as to Nader was saying, it's not that we've seen no inaction from the Johnson administration. Like Nader was saying, we've seen a lot of action through the Chicago Police Department in terms of arresting, I believe it was 68 students from the art that were protesting at the Art Institute of Chicago. And so it'll be interesting to see where the Department of Justice chooses to focus their energy on, and whether or not that will be taken into account when doing all these interviews.
And we can't miss the fact that there's a you wanted to turn Gaza into a Riviera,
a resort.
So there's much push against pro-Palestinians, and this becomes just another way to push against that throughout. So we continue to see it. This is just another way of doing it.
Sort of use the leverage of the federal government continuously against cities that very much depend on the feds for all of the reasons that we have been talking about. However, Mitch, we did have the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers say that it is no longer going to expand a toxic dump that was near Calumet Park that it had been long been planning on doing. What's being dumped, and why did the Army Corps of Engineers reverse course?
So this is a project that environmental activists on the southeast side have been battling for years. The Army Corps of Engineers has said that they need to basically set up a new dump for just a lot of toxic chemicals that are just dredged out of the Calumet River, like you said, a really important port of entry for a lot of ships coming in through the Chicago area and even up through Canada. And essentially what activists were able to force the hands of was they got the Illinois EPA on their side and filed a lawsuit to stop this, and essentially the Army Corps of Engineers just waved the white flag on this one.
So do we know where this material is now going to go, or what next steps are? It doesn't vanish.
A court suggested other sites, existing sites, rather than dumping it into one new site. And, I mean, like Mitch said, this has been a fight for a long time, and the southeast side especially. It's sort of
a hub of environmental
mm-hmm. activism, because there is so much environmental injustice and, you know, toxic waste put in that area, and residents around there breathe it in.
And we continue to see this around the country. There are always these communities that are the poor communities, the underserved communities, where you find environmental issues mm-hmm. because seemingly the people there don't have a voice. And so these things happen because you don't hear back the people who are there.
Which is where environmental advocates are very much claiming victory. And another piece of relatively good news for environmental activists especially, Chicago's air pollution has actually improved, it seems. We are the 7th worst air quality in the United States, and considering we're the 3rd biggest city, that's, I guess, somewhat surprising. What has improved, Melody?
It's part of the warmer winters, so climate change is playing a part into this, where because winters haven't been as cold as in the past, that nobody is burning their wood fireplaces as much, so it's not contributing to pollution in the air. That was something that was mentioned in the report, and I thought that was very interesting. In addition to that, we don't have a giant wildfire that's coming down from Canada, which definitely affected Chicago's air quality back in, what was it, 2023 now, 2024?
Yeah, 2022.
Yeah, some time is a flat circle. It's nice to see the improvement there, and I think that environmental activists are hoping to ramp this up so that maybe we won't be in the top 10 anymore.
But still higher levels of particulate matter than are deemed safe, unfortunately. Now, let's go, Nader. CPS data, some, 700,000 current and former pupils at Chicago Public Schools have had their data hacked, and now it is in the hands of Russian hackers. So what information are we looking at, and was CPS a target?
Yeah, it seems that this was a sort of deliberate attack trying to get data. It also seems that we can write this story, the same story, every few years. This happens a lot, unfortunately. There are hacks and data breaches at CPS. There wasn't any, you know, very sensitive personal information taken. There was no social security numbers, addresses, anything like that. The breach was mostly around Medicare and Medicaid information. And so there's sort of nothing that hackers can do with that information right now. Families shouldn't, you know, be worried that they'll have identity theft or anything like that. But that information can then be used in a sort of phishing attack. People can reach out and say, hey, we know you're on this policy, or you want these services, and we want to, like, you owe us money, something like that, to try to get people to cooperate and steal their money that way. But
So be wary, be cautious.
Yeah, it is quite a lot of people, 700,000 current and former students.
Yes, that is a lot of people. Now, Rufus, we have a new push for a curfew for minors. 8 p.m. is what Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins is suggesting. What prompted this latest push? He has advocated for it before.
Shootings downtown. When it gets warm outside, everybody comes out, and unfortunately it leads to gathering and acting out of turn and violence. And so Brian Hopkins has been pushing for this for some time. Every time something happens, the result is to do a curfew. The mayor looks at a holistic way in which we deal with children. And so he thinks about how we can best go in and give them all the other things that they need versus being heavy-handed in the imposition of a curfew. So there are a number of social service agencies that are doing a lot of work with young people. But as we see this happen, and this is the first time it happened, it should not necessarily be a knee-jerk reaction that says, okay, everyone go home and go inside, because one, there's no way to enforce it. But better, it should be ways in which there are alternative things that are found for children to do.
And Melody, you've done some reporting on this. Does this have any traction within the city council, or does the fact that he's introduced it before and it hasn't gained any momentum a sign that it is not going to, again, particularly after Lightfoot got a lot of pushback when the former mayor instituted an earlier curfew?
Mm-hmm. Alderman Hopkins is going to attempt to try to get his original ordinance out of the Rules Committee, which is where famously legislation goes to die. The first time around, when he had introduced it, sent to Rules right away, I don't see a lot of support, or at least a majority of support, to be able to get this out of Rules and get the ball rolling. However, Alderman Hopkins is planning to call a hearing next month on this exact issue, but I think it's just going to be the same gridlock that we experienced around the same time last year.
Meanwhile, Mitch, you have been reporting on Ukrainians. There are some, 40,000 or so that are living in Chicago. And what are you hearing from them after now the Trump administration is talking about revoking their protected status?
Well, there's huge concerns across the community. Like you said, almost 250,000 Ukrainians have come to the United States since the Russian invasion. Almost 50,000 Ukrainians now are living in Chicago on a temporary humanitarian parole status, which basically gives them a two-year sort of streamlined process to living in the United States legally. This is a system that former President Joe Biden set up, and current President Trump has now hinted that he might rescind these protections for Ukrainians. So talking to folks in Ukrainian Village and on the northwest side, where there's huge Ukrainian enclaves, a lot of the concerns that we've heard from other immigrant communities across Chicago in the Latino community, just about immigration, customs, and enforcement agents knocking on their door and potentially taking them away. There are folks who are concerned in the Ukrainian community about potentially losing their legal status within a month of the president rescinding this. That hasn't happened yet, but everyone's kind of on full alert.
And Rufus, we only have about 15 seconds left, but quickly, does it make any difference that Chicago is a sanctuary city and Illinois is a sanctuary state? Does that help them protect?
I think it does, because then the authorities cannot go in and find them and remove them. So that's a good thing for the folks who are looking to stay. We continue to come to these things, and there's just a sense of, there's a lack of empathy that comes from from there that just leaves.
No lack of empathy here with me cutting you off, but we are out of time, so I'm sorry to do that to you. I will give my appreciation, of course, to you, Rufus Williams, as well as to Mitchell Armantrout, Melody Mercado, and Nader Issa. We will, however, be back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. Check out our website for the latest from WTTW News, including whether the Chicago River's dye job is getting this weekend is bad for fish. That is at the WTTW.com/news. And now for the Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night. Enjoy those St. Patrick's Day festivities if you are going to partake. Mitch, we have seen some long lines of folks getting their real IDs after, what, a decade or so. Finally, there is a real deadline. What do people need to know?
They need to know that you probably don't need one unless you're trying to get on an airplane after May 7th. But if you have a passport, that works too. So it's kind of impossible to get employment these days. But you don't really have to panic, probably.
So don't panic unless you don't have a passport, but you do need to get on a plane. And real briefly, Nader, let's go to you. The mayor's gift closet. Are we finally done with this saga now that he has opened it?
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.